But anyway, this other body had a soul who was sick of living on Earth, who, sometime before, had taken a wrong path, and so he knew that his own task would not be completed in that particular life. He had contemplated suicide. He hoped to die, he wished that he could will himself to death, he wasn't happy. Yet his particular body vibrated on a fundamental harmonic of that other body which was falling to pieces. It was a body which would be compatible. Let me digress for a moment and remind you that you may like a car very much indeed, and then you may get into another car and it will remind you strongly of the car you just left, you get on with that particular car. But if you had moved from your own car to the famous brand X, you might have found that it just did not suit your own temperament. So, while it would work just as it would for everyone else, you still would not be entirely at ease with it, not entirely happy with it, and all the time you would wish you had something better to suit you, more compatible with you, not necessarily better engineering or better condition but something better in the compatibility line. So in this instance this particular person was able to contact the occupant of a body and an arrangement was made. You will find it all in the Rampa story, so why we have to keep on groaning away about this particular subject I just don't understand. It has been written, it has been discussed, and throughout living history there have been many cases of transmigration. 99. Q. Yes. That seems clear enough, but it still isn't absolutely clear why this particular body was taken. A. I confess that I am not at all clear about your question. Supposing body Y had been taken instead of body Z, for example. You would have been asking the same thing again, why take that body? But I have already tried to make it clear to you, because the two bodies had a fundamental frequency, a fundamental vibration. Because they were compatible with each other, because the controls were similar, because, as controls were similar, immediate takeover would be easy, because the body was there ready to be vacated, and because the person was so willing and anxious. What more can one say? The significance of this case is that the body was there at the right time for the right purpose, and so it was not necessary to be like the gentleman of old who wailed and wailed, crying, "My horse! My horse, my kingdom for a horse." The horse, or, more properly, vehicle was there. And that is all there is to it. The fact that the person was married was just a side issue and, well, I suppose it wasn't adequately considered, and as it turned out things were entirely satisfactory. By the way, you know, you are asking a lot of questions. Now, why shouldn't I ask a question or two and get your answers? So here is something which I want to know. You and I have been quite good friends and I thought there was loyalty in friendship. I have tried to help you, but ever since we heard this affair, this report, your attitude has been very antagonistic. But I am the same person. There is nothing coming out now that didn't come out some 12 or 13 years ago, so why have you changed? We have heard that some jealous person and his immature cohorts are going to write a book about me because this particular person feels resentful that my books sell. Well, I am still wondering why your attitude has changed so much, why you seem so antagonistic towards me. I am not antagonistic towards you because I can see a bit further than the mere superficial shell which surrounds most people. So, do you have any worthwhile comment which I can put in the book which I am writing for the English reading world? You see, for many years I have been attacked and attacked by a moronic type of person who knows nothing. 100. About the subject, who has never bothered to read my books. Found near him the book was labeled the murder book. But I state definitely in all my books that I am greatly opposed to suicide. Suicide is no way out. It is the way back. And yet the press, of which you are a member, attacked me and said that I was encouraging suicides. I got in touch with the press in England and challenged them to show me any place in any of my books where I in any way encouraged or condoned suicide. They did not take up my challenge. Now, are you going to take up my challenge? Have you truly read all my books? All the salient facts about me are given in the Rampa story. Have you read it? Then, if you have read it, Why has your attitude changed so much towards me? Now it seems to me that you regard me as some particularly offensive effluvia which the dog has just dragged in. I have my feelings just as you do, perhaps even a little more. So, there it is. Now the ball is passed to you. But let us leave that for the moment and get on with these other things which apparently puzzle the great brains of the press. You say, I believe, why don't I remember my out-of-body experiences? I get a lot of letters and a tremendous number of people who have read my books write to me and tell me that they now do remember their out-of-body experiences. So, as one progresses, one does remember. Once you remember properly, then you always remember properly. The thing is this, down on Earth the average person is not meant to remember his out-of-body experiences, nor is he intended to remember what he or she was in a past life or a past life, and that is rightly so, because if a man had been a king in a far distant life and he was now a beggar, then he would find his position intolerable. It might even make him too much of an arrogant beggar. So isn't it true that there is somewhere a sentence written about those who, having drunk of the waters of Lethe, forget the past that they may live in the present in preparation for the future? I have read something about it. But it is a kind 101. Provision of nature, or of God, if you like, to give people temporary forgetfulness of the past so that they may live in the future, and the present. You see, I started this off by saying that if we are to believe in a good God, then we have to believe that there must be some sort of recompense for those who come as beggars and sufferers. Otherwise, if there is only one life, how can you, Mr. Pressman, explain the fairness of a God who lets one person come as a very wealthy man with all the position and power he wants and no troubles, and another comes as a deformed person, perhaps even mentally impaired, and in poverty? If there is only one life, then quite clearly it would be an injustice to the underprivileged person, and too much favoritism for the one who had everything. Of course, that is just one aspect of the thing. There are various proofs which have been established in Indian religions about the truth of reincarnation. Christianity, you know, is quite a modern religion compared to some of the Indian religions, and actually the Indian religions are the forerunners of the Christian. It is known that Christ took over the body of Jesus, and the Spirit of the Lord entered unto Jesus, and then Christ wandered in the wilderness. Sure he did, he went to the Far East, he went through India. He went through Tibet, he met with the wise men of the time, and he formulated from all the religions he had studied a religion which at that time seemed to be most suitable from the people of that time. So that Christianity, as devised by Christ, was a mixture of Oriental religions as well as the religions of mythology. But then in about the year 60, many of the priests who rushed to jump on the bandwagon and get in on the ground floor, so to speak, thought they were losing power because of the simplicity and purity of the Christian religion, and so they messed about with the religion. They decided what they were going to have taught, and in many cases it was the complete opposite of what Christ taught. Christ was not a woman hater, he did not think that women were unclean. In fact, if you study the real records, you will find that Christ was a married man with a family, but that is a fact that is carefully hidden. And Christian experts like to keep such information. 102 From the ordinary people, because they think that Christianity would then lose some of its mystique. But you still cannot get over this business of reincarnation. Well, I am not going to prove anything. There is proof, you know, there quite definitely is proof, but I have found in the past few years that one just cannot prove anything to a person who doesn't want to have the proof. It is like taking a horse to the water. You can take the creature to the water, but you can't make him drink. If you try to, he just chokes. So I say there is proof of reincarnation for those who will study Eastern and Oriental religions, but if you people can't even bother to read my books before condemning me, then how are you going to study Hindu, Brahmin, Muslim, etc., religions? The best that you can do is to just give it up and wait until bitter experience teaches you that there is a bit more to all this than you had thought up to the present. Now, you have a question here which I thought I had already answered. Q. What am I doing wrong? Why are we not taught about the fact of living again and again? A. But surely we have already been dealing with all that almost ad nauseum. Wait a minute, where is that question again? Why are we not taught about the fact of living again and again? Well, people used to be, and I am referring to Christian people now. It used to be a part of a Christian doctrine. People puzzle over, in my father's house there are many mansions, but they do not understand what it really means. What it actually means is many planes of existence, many levels of astral life. In the old days when Christianity started and when it was formed from some of the Indian religions, reincarnation was taught, the whole mechanism of it was taught, and it is still taught in Eastern countries. But unfortunately Christians regard Christianity as the only doctrine or teaching which can possibly be considered. So if you say, why are we not taught? I can say, but you are taught. It is just that some of your teachers try to obscure the issue. Christianity is not the biggest religion numerically, so it doesn't become the 103. Most important. If you would study other religions you would find that reincarnation is taught. Unfortunately the Catholic belief is that it is wrong to accept the truth of anything except a remarkably rigid doctrine which was set down by priests to safeguard their own power. They made a lot of hoopla about it being a mortal sin to think for yourself. They taught that you had to believe everything that the priests tell you, lock, stock, and barrel, even when it is obviously too ridiculous for a normal person to believe. But the Catholic priests have got their public hoaxed, hypnotized into a state of terror wherein they just dare not think for themselves. Even the Pope nowadays seems to think there is quite a lot wrong with the Catholic religion, that is why he is making so many changes, isn't it? And even the Dalai Lama has admitted, to the press, I believe, that he was not a reincarnation of Chen Rezi. I believe I am correct in saying that he gave the complete circumstances of how he was picked to be this Dalai Lama. But anywhere if you study you will find out, yes, there is the truth of reincarnation available for those who are prepared to accept the truth and who do not go about with their eyes glued shut. Q. Why do we live beset by problems? A. If you go to school, if you go to college, you have problems all the time and you have to solve the problems. You go to school to learn things and to learn how to solve problems. If you are in the arithmetic class, for instance, you are given a problem about a man who can mow a field in so many days, but how quickly will the field be mowed if you use 3.5 men and a dog, or stuff like that. It is all questions. It might seem utterly stupid while you are at school, but afterwards you find that you can apply the solution of the problem to other problems which occur in the greater life beyond the school. In the same way, down on this earth there are all manner of problems and the more evolved a person becomes the harder his problems become. But then when he goes to the greater life beyond this earth, beyond all thought of returning to this earth by way of reincarnating, then he finds that the knowledge he gained on this earth with his problems helps him in other spheres of activity. 104. If there were no problems on earth then there would be no point in living here. If people just sat about all day and played with money or other things that money could buy, they would not be learning anything, they would be idling away their time. So instead a person gets more and more problems, and the further he progresses and evolves the greater his problems become. In the same way, in a school a university graduate would have no problem at all with the questions set the first grader or the kindergarten people, but the problems of the undergraduate would be completely beyond the comprehension of the kindergarten child. So the difficulties which a person encounters are not an indication that he is a bad person, that he is having to pay for sins committed in the past. Instead it is an indication, pure and simple, that he has evolved enough so that he can be tested by quite difficult examinations. So when I tell you that you are adding to my problems, well, I am learning how to solve them. But all the injustice that you are showing to me will have to be paid back by you. If you want money and you don't want to work for it, then you can only borrow it from someone, but it has to be paid back with interest. And I tell you in all seriousness, all the hatred that has been directed at me by misguided people who condemn without hearing the story for the defense, well, all that is going to come back on those haters plus accrued interest. Now, that is not a fairy tale, that is a fact, as you will find out. You will find out, too, in your own hour of need that loyalty, friendship, are things beyond price. If you do not give loyalty, if you do not give your friendship, when your time of trouble comes you will find that you lack the loyalty and the friendship which would help you in your difficulties. It will come for sure. Just make a note of it when this book is published, keep it in front of you, put a bookmarker in, and then you see if you don't get some troubles and you find that people whom you trusted are not loyal to you. You see, the whole position is this: I have done nothing wrong. I have told the truth all the way through. I have concealed nothing. And yet the press, of which you are a member, has set itself up as accuser, judge, jury, and executioner. But I am not dead yet, I have a lot more active life in me. I, 105, can only say to you of the press that it might be very profitable for you to read your Christian Bible, read Exodus, chapter 22-21, which reads, "Thou shalt neither vex a stranger, nor oppress him, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt." But in place of Egypt, why not put Canada? I am sure it would be applicable. Here is a further question which apparently originated with the press. Q. Do animals go to the spirit world and do we see them again? Do they have souls and intelligence? A. Animals have intelligence? Good gracious me, yes. Some of them are more intelligent than some humans. My little Siamese cat, Cleopatra, is truly the most intelligent little person I have met. She shows high intelligence and high appreciation. And Ted Linker is exceptionally clairvoyant and telepathic, and you can't say that for most humans, can you? Yes, animals go to the spirit world. If we are to assume the existence of a god, and how can we exist without a god? Then we must agree that little animals and big animals too have their rights, have their right to be considered by a god, because humans are only one specialized form of animal, a more savage form than is common among animals. It is said that only humans and spiders commit rape. That's worth a thought, too. But animals, yes, they go to the astral world in precisely the same manner as do humans. They are born again and again, but of course each species reincarnates according to its own classification. That is, humans do not become animals and animals do not become humans. They are different things altogether. But again, if you have read all my books you will have read about cats and what they do in this life. It is only Christians who deny that animals have souls. But then most Christians show little appreciation for their own souls. They do whatever they can to harm others, always ready to take the advantage, but animals do not do that. Animals kill only to eat, they do not murder for money and all that sort of thing. They live according to the law of nature, which is how they have to live, but you have never heard of an animal going out shooting partridges or duck just for the fun of it. You have never seen animals rushing along a road trying to run down a 106 weaker animal just for something to do. But humans do that. The answer to your question is, yes, animals have souls, animals have intelligence. And, yes, if a human and an animal want to meet on the other side of life then they can do so provided both want it because the human is not the lord of creation. In other worlds and in other existences humans are not much more than the earthworms are on this world. Q. Why will you not see people? Why will you not be more sociable and mix with people? A. Well, I have already answered this. I have already told you that everyone has a right to decide if they are going to meet people or not meet people, and quite bluntly, why should I meet press people? My attitude about the press is this: press people go out of their way to try to prove me false, to try to prove that I write lies. But my dear man, fancy the press, of all people, doing this. Who are they to set themselves up as judges? Before the press can write about the lies or alleged lies of others, they should make sure that their own conscience is clear. It has come to a bad thing, you know, when the Pope and bishops and other equally important people have to ask the press to be more truthful. And yet, these are the people who try to judge me. It makes me laugh. But you know, there is a very good reason for remaining what I can only term solitary. I have different abilities, different powers, because, at risk of repeating myself, I am going to tell you that all my books are true and I can do every one of those things that I write about, but that means I have different sensitivities from the average. I cannot do some of the things which the average person takes for granted, but because I live alone I develop other senses. Look at it like this: if a person is blind, then he develops an increased sense of touch or an increased sense of hearing, which, in some degree, compensates for the loss of sight. Again, if people live in a herd, then they all come down to the common herd level, but if a man goes away into the wilderness for a time, he finds that his senses became far more acute, his sight becomes more acute, his hearing becomes more acute, and so does his sense of smell. Trackers who live in the wilds have a very, very keen set of senses. In fact, some of the Aborigines in Australia can. 107. Track a man several days after he passed that way when there is no sign of anything at all unusual to the average white man. So if a person is going to develop and retain special alibi ties, he has to live alone. If he mixes too much, then his sensitivities become blunted. You find monks living as recluses will get increased power. They become telepathic or clairvoyant, but they call it communing with God or similar. Actually, it is just that which happens in the normal course of events. But if you wish to develop, then you have to be alone, and that is about all there is to it. Perhaps I should say that what really happens is that when you get a lot of people together, you get some with negative auras, others with positive auras, some with strong thoughts and some with bad thoughts. Everything is mixed up and it leads to a depletion of nervous energy. How many times have you felt drained, depleted, tired out after going and mixing with a lot of people? Suppose you go to a big party, everyone is drinking and chattering and danking about from place to place. It may be all right while you are there, but afterwards you feel drained, you get a hangover or something, and you think it is solely the fault of the alcohol, but it is not. It is through draining of the nervous energy through mixing with so many people of conflicting auras. Suppose you got a whole bunch of magnets and you tossed them in a pile together. Some would cling to some, and others would be repelled, depending, of course, on which way their poles were facing, that is, whether they were positive or negative. And people are just the same as that, because the vehicle called a human is, after all, just an electric device. There are brain waves. Well, it is admitted nowadays that there are brain waves. It is admitted that thoughts can be charted with squiggly lines on paper and brain voltages can be readily measured. So all these are in conflict when they are too mixed up with the others. Every person has a basic note, I might call it a music note, except that some of the frequencies are not too musical after all, but every person emits a noise like static with a hum behind it. You may have heard something like this if you got close to a beehive. But people buzz, and tick and hum, and humans are so utterly used to it that they no longer notice. 108. It in the same way, every race has its own distinctive smell. White people cannot get too close to black people, they say, because they allege that the black people smell, but usually the black people are far too polite to turn around to the white person and say, "Well, you stink a jolly sight worse." But it is true. Everyone has their own race smell, upon which is superimposed that person's own particular aroma, and every person also emits a note which can be detected by instruments, and the note is the note of that person's race, on which is superimposed the person's identity note. The two may result in harmony or discord, and if it is discord, then the person is very hard to associate with, because one has the feeling of being badly drained. One has the feeling that always in association with that person there is an unfortunate clash of personalities. Q. What do you really think about meditation? A. Meditation is a very real, very necessary thing. American researchers have recently found that when a person is in a state of meditation, his general metabolic responses are considerably affected, his blood changes, his general being changes, and all this can be detected very readily by instruments. The worst thing about meditation is all the rubbish being written about it. All these cults, correspondence courses, etc., etc., are absolutely unnecessary. You don't need all this guff to help you to meditate. It seems that the only help is to help the bank account of the one who is teaching meditation. Meditation is natural. It is as natural as breathing. It is as natural as thinking. But the fantastic tales which go around about how to meditate and what meditation is, well, it is enough to put anyone off. One of the biggest difficulties, of course, is that there are so many fakes in occult work, but that again is the fault of people, because if people as a whole would be more open-minded, then definite research could be done in the matter of investigating what was genuine and what was not genuine. This is a thing about which I feel very strongly. We send men into space, which is quite unnecessary, because it could all be done by astral travel with far, far better results. But anyway, men are sent into space, but no money at all is being spent on investigation of what comes after death. Is there really astral travel? I know there is, of course, but it could be in 109. Investigated for the ordinary man or woman in the street. If scientists would keep an open mind, then those with genuine abilities would gladly cooperate to demonstrate their abilities. Now we get a case where a self-styled researcher browbeats a genuine psychic person and says, "Okay, you perform for me and I'll do my best to prove you are a fake. I don't believe what you do and I will prove that it is all a fake." In such conditions, proof cannot be given, because some of the occult sciences are very delicate things indeed. Very fragile things indeed. They have to have the right conditions. You wouldn't suddenly say to a photographer, "Okay, I'm coming into the darkroom with you to see exactly what you are doing," and then go into the darkroom and switch on all the lights. That would ruin whatever the photographer was trying to do, and it would be too stupid for words. So, if there is to be proof, there would have to be researchers who are sympathetic. They would not have to commit themselves to believing, mind, but they would have to be sympathetic, they would have to keep an open mind and be ready to accept. It is the brutality of the present investigation that shocks the psychics into refusing to cooperate, and of course the press must bear the greatest responsibility for that, because they come along with their blaring trumpeting voices and their hard-boiled skeptical attitudes, and they are not ready to believe anything even if it is proved. If a thing is proved beyond any genuine doubt, then the press will insist that there must be trickery somewhere, and it's just too bad that for the moment they can't point out where or what it is. Anyway, the time will come when it will be necessary to carry out a proper investigation into what is death, what comes after death. The press say you can't weigh a soul. No, but who wants to? A soul is in a different dimension. They are using the wrong yardstick. Everyone consists of a bunch of vibrations, just as a radio signal is, in effect, a vibration or a frequency or a wavelength. Humans are on part of a certain spectrum. While down here on Earth we have weight, we can feel resistance if we poke something which we consider to be solid. But if we go into a different dimension, then the things that down here are solid are no longer solid. In fact, they may be so insubstantial. 110. That they cannot be perceived at all. A similar thing happens to the other side of the scale. A soul departs from a body, but it is on a different time, a different dimension, and so the crude three-dimensional equipment cannot detect it. When we get scientists who will listen to the advice of occultists as to how things can be tested, then indeed adequate proof will be coming forward, because there are genuine occultists. There are, of course, many fakes, but there are quite definitely thousands of genuinely occult people who can do what they claim to do. They should be preserved and the fakes should be weeded out. Q. How do you say one should learn to meditate? A. I have gone into that quite a lot in my books. There is no difficulty at all in it. The main difficulty is caused by people who won't believe how easy it is. They want to work hard at it, and so they are so busy working hard at it that they don't get results. If you want to know how to meditate, then read my books.